It's the Southside's own Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
So Jake Bentley chased and dropped the 15-yard line. Roquan, the chef, Smith.
Roquan Smith, he's the highlight show of this defense.
In the ring, Steamboat's got him up. A slam. McClary, he's got paid one, two. He did it. He did it. Steamboat played well. And Blair has done it. Blair has done it.
And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up, Ben? Welcome in. You're listening to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, weeknights at 7 with open phone lines at 312-332-ESPN. 332-3776 is our telephone number. Hit me up on Snapchat, Snapchat Hood. You follow me on Snapchat, I follow you back guaranteed. Also on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood. Glad that you're with us. Hope that you have a great 4th of July. Hope that you have a great July 5th. That's why we're here with you until 10 o'clock. We'll hear from Nick Friedel, who covers the NBA at 9:10 here on ESPN 1000 from ESPN.com. Also, Jesse Rogers, who covered the Cubs. We'll get his thoughts at 9:35 about the Cubs and everything else National League Central right here on ESPN 1000. Let me give you a little insight on Kawhi Leonard and the San Antonio Spurs. I think it's interesting. So, when I'm not here at ESPN 1000 doing my show Under the Hood weeknights here on ESPN 1000, I will tend to do other shows. Like, I also work for ESPN doing network shows. You hear those on Saturdays and Sundays. We'll be on again. I'll be with Sean Farnham, I think, Saturday night. We'll be on from 10 to midnight. And then Sunday afternoon, it's part of the Dickerson and Hood show. We do Saturday nights and then Sunday afternoons from 3 to 7. You can hear both of those shows right here on ESPN 1000. It's also on SiriusXM Channel 80. It's always on the ESPN app, but you can find me on the weekends. Not only weeknights, but you can find me on the weekends as well here on ESPN 1000. So I'm doing those shows as well as doing a SiriusXM NBA radio show. I did one this morning, as a matter of fact. So SiriusXM NBA radio is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week NBA. And so this morning I worked with Antonio Daniels. And by the way, that should not be a surprise to you if you follow me on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood, on the Facebook wall, because I always tell you when I'm on. I always let you know that when I'm on, for you to love me or hate me or somewhere in between or disagree or agree. I always tell you when I'm on, and I was on this morning. So I hosted a show with Antonio Daniels, friend of the program, NBA champion with the San Antonio Spurs. There's been a lot of hyperbole, a lot of question marks. I heard it earlier today, as a matter of fact, on the station, about Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard wants to be traded from the San Antonio Spurs. Kawhi Leonard is a top 10 player in the NBA. He was out because of an injury for the majority of the season. I think he only played maybe no more than 7, 8, 9 games for the San Antonio Spurs. It became very curious that Kawhi Leonard was not around for the San Antonio Spurs when they're in the playoffs. He stayed in New York and was trying to rehab his injury. There is a disconnect between Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs organization. Greg Popovich, East Chicago's own, has been part of this team for a long time as a head coach and also someone that's in the front office. Now, I tell you this story because Kawhi Leonard may hold a card when it comes to this offseason with the NBA, because Kawhi Leonard wants to be traded. We understand that he loved to play for the Los Angeles Lakers or play in Los Angeles. I don't know if that's Clippers or Lakers because Kawhi Leonard does not speak. And the people around him don't necessarily speak. But when I say San Antonio Spurs, what comes to mind? Championships, right? Tim Duncan, David Robinson, Greg Popovich. You think about basketball royalty. All the championship teams and the dynasties that we have seen in the NBA, going back to the 1940s with the Minneapolis Lakers, the 50s, the 60s, definitely the 60s, and of course in the 80s as well, the Boston Celtics, the amount of championships that they won. The Lakers, how many championships that they've won as a franchise. The Pistons winning a couple, Heat winning a couple, Bulls winning six. The Spurs winning four championships. The Warriors now with three championships. It's all about dynasties in the NBA. And the Spurs are part of that. So I talked to Antonio Daniels, who happened to play on one of those championship teams. And I finally got him to open up long form. And I'll just play a little bit of it for you on NBA radio, where he talked about the reason why that there is an issue with Kawhi Leonard and the San Antonio Spurs. Listen closely.
In this situation right here, I feel like so many people are so adamant at seeing this from the Spurs point of view, and not very many people are looking at it from Kawhi Leonard's point of view.
But you know why that is, AD, is because if what you just laid out for us, you give Popovich and the Spurs organization the benefit of the doubt, because look at the success and look how very little drama comes out of San Antonio.
Well, you know what? That's called the Tim Duncan effect. Mm-hmm. That's what having 21 in your locker room and a part of your organization and community does. What it does is it puts a bubble around your organization that your fan base doesn't realize the drama that comes with the other 29 teams in the NBA. But when Tim Duncan walked out that door, and I said this years ago, when Tim Duncan walks out that door, there is a huge piece of that culture that's walking out with him. Yes, Greg Popovich is fantastic. RC Buber is great. But you best believe Tim Duncan and his ability to withstand everything from this community, to be the face of this community, while being quiet at times and then using his voice at times, has shielded this fan base from so much. Now they're seeing it.
There's a lot of things you can say about the Spurs organization, but the one thing that's always pulled out, I'll pull out file number 7 out of all the things you can say about the Spurs. I'll just pull this file out. The file that you'll hear from the Spurs is that Pop treats all the players the same. Like, there is no star power. It's like, he doesn't treat the top
okay.
guy.
And it was that way when I got there, Jay Hood. But right. I tell you this is generational with Kawhi Leonard. And what worked with Tim Duncan and David Robinson may not work with Kawhi Leonard.
So the thoughts there from Antonio Daniels. If you listen closely to what Antonio Daniels said, the reason why that there is even a disconnect between the Spurs and Kawhi Leonard is that the last few seconds of that soundbite from this morning, what worked for David Robinson and Tim Duncan does not necessarily work for LaMarcus Aldridge and Kawhi Leonard. What he's saying in that soundbite is Tim Duncan took a lot from Popovich and the Spurs organization. When we heard that Popovich treated the number one player as he did the number 12 player, Tim Duncan just took it. He shielded that from the media, his frustration. He shielded it from his own teammates. He shielded it from everyone else and just took it. So all of the inside stuff with the San Antonio Spurs, you wouldn't know anything about it because Tim Duncan didn't speak on the record about what he was going through as a Spur. It's not like he was being abused, but any time that a coach is yelling at the best player, like he's yelling at the number 11 and 12 player on the bench, it's like, wow. Yes, he's treating everybody the same, but yet in sports, that's not really how it works. It's not like you give the best player a pass. You also hold him accountable. But if you're yelling at Tim Duncan like you yell at Antonio Daniels, that's an issue. I'm not saying that Daniels was the worst player on those teams. I'm just using it as an example. So here's the point. The point is the Spurs, similar to the New England Patriots, where Tom Brady took it from Bill Belichick. Rob Gronkowski took it from Bill Belichick. Again, Belichick, same way as Popovich, you know, making sure he's holding everybody accountable, maybe yelling and maybe doing whatever he has to do to be able to manipulate players into what they need, what he needs to be a Super Bowl champion, what they need to be a Super Bowl champion. And now, every now and then, you'll hear a former Patriot say, this was not a great opportunity, this was not great because of this, that, and the other. Slowly, Tom Brady, the news leaking out in his conversation with Oprah Winfrey. Slowly, at the Sloan conference, do you feel appreciated? Tom Brady said, no comment. So whatever you think glitters, that's not necessarily gold. So clearly, Kawhi Leonard does not want to be held accountable to the extent that Robinson and Duncan were. And again, doesn't make Kawhi Leonard a bad teammate. Doesn't make him a bad spur. But clearly, he's willing to swipe right and do something different. Whatever worked for Tim Duncan, quiet, not saying anything, just taking it, and sometimes unfairly, is not the same thing that Aldridge and Kawhi wants to do. And really, in that soundbite, in that conversation with my co-host Antonio Daniels, that was revealed. Daniels has been on here on this show and has not said what he said on that soundbite. He just revealed to you that Kawhi is just tired of the Spurs way, and he's looking to swipe right and do something different. And Aldridge was like that too last year. Davis?
Tim Duncan was tired of it. Almost went to Orlando with Doc Rivers.
There you go.
Yeah.
But didn't say anything.
No, he didn't.
See. As you're listening to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app, Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, so glad you're with us. Let's go to Las Vegas. A man who covers the NBA like a blanket for ESPN.com is Nick Friedel. He joins me here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Hello, Nick.
Hello, my friend.
How about that with Daniels? And Nick, by the way, was on that show as well this morning with Antonio Daniels and me. I thought that Antonio Daniels, this is why I love what I do, but that SiriusXM, Nick, that long form, no commercial, pretty much, conversations, things start to leak out. I know you might have caught the tail end of that. Daniels pretty much saying, you know, like the reason why the Kawhi would want out pretty much is he's not Tim Duncan. He's not David Robinson. That he's not just going to be treated the same way that the 11th or 12th man on the bench is treated.
Right. And I think that was really fascinating, Hoodie. And what's come out, you mentioned the LaMarcus Aldridge stuff. A lot of this is on Greg Popovich, because I think he's either got to learn that you can't treat guys that same way that you might have with Duncan and others in the past, or you keep doing things your way, and you're not going to be able sometimes to have the same kind of relationship with the star players on your team. So the whole thing is really interesting, and it delves into a deeper conversation about the way the league has shifted and how, I mean, star players have always been important, but even more so now, they call more shots than I can ever remember. Both where they want to play, who they want to have them coach them. So it's a really, really intriguing part of the NBA world now. And yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, in Antonio's comments, you realize that things are different there and things are starting to leak out more in San Antonio. But then he said the same thing that Mike Wright told us the other night as well, Hoodie, which was he still thinks there's a chance that Pop and Kawhi sit in the room together and get things hashed out over time. So the story in San Antonio is not over, but it will continue to dominate the conversation for a while within the league.
I just think that what Daniel said to me this morning on the show that you were on as well, just telling me, like, you know, the why. Now you're just wondering, like, what's the next shoe to drop? Will the Spurs be able to keep Kawhi Leonard, or will they trade him? And again, that's a whole different kettle of fish. But, you know, the thing is, you're never going to get equal value for a Kawhi Leonard. And the hope is, if you're the Spurs, you can talk him into staying. And if not, get as many draft picks and young players as you can.
Take it all. I mean, that's what they're asking for from the Lakers right now, it seems. And if you're the Lakers, are you willing to roll the dice one more time that, you know, the guy who says he wants to be in L.A., a la Paul George, will end up still wanting to be in L.A. a year from now? And if you're another team, do you take the chance that you can convince Kawhi that he can stay with your team? So, look, this is why the league is so popular right now. These are storylines that aren't going to die anytime soon. And everybody, I can tell you, in Vegas is wondering the same thing that we are right now. Where will this thing finally stop with the Spurs and Kawhi Leonard?
Nick Friedel in Las Vegas covering the Summer League with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Okay. And I'm not going to ask you any Wizards questions because that was what I asked you this morning. You were great, though.
Yeah, well, I mean,
you're always great. But I just I had to get that Wizards question into you because it's compelling because it's one of the top eight teams in the East. So,
well, quickly, Hoodie, on the Wizards, but it's a much broader NBA conversation. The point is, you can't sign bad deals to max players who aren't max players anymore, or maybe who never were. Mm-hmm. In Andrew Wiggins' case, so. When you have bad money tied up, they are seeing that in D.C., they're seeing it in Minneapolis, they're seeing it in a lot of places. And it's another reminder for Bulls fans that are listening to us now, the Bulls have to be very, very cautious with this Zach LaVine conversation and contract discussion, because if they go too deep in both years and money with LaVine, and LaVine doesn't turn into the kind of player that they need him to be, well, uh-oh, that's when you really mess things up long-term for your organization, and there are a lot of teams in the league that are dealing with that at the moment.
So I'm wondering how this Bulls thing is going to – we know what's the question mark about Zach LaVine. Now the question is, do you think the Bulls will pay him based on what you put on Twitter over the weekend? They think that they're going to go over the 4 years, $60 million, just to spite you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to go too far over, Hoodie. Right, look, this thing has always been about finding that other offer. When you're a restricted free agent, you need the other offer. And in this case, there's been so much talk about Sacramento. If Sacramento comes in with 4 years, $80 million, man, I mean, this is at the heart of not only the Bulls conversation now, but what happens in the next few years. If it's me, I am not matching if I'm the Bulls. And I know there are a lot of people out there that say, well, you can't just let an asset walk for nothing. Well, I'm also here to tell you that you can't sign a player for $20 million a year when you're not sure that that player is close to being a $20 million a year player at the moment. So the whole thing is really, really crucial to anything the Bulls are going to do in the next couple of years. I know they are intent on having as much space as they can to try and go after some of these big names, both in the summer of 2019 and summer of 2020. But fans want to win now. I mean, they're kind of sick of this waiting game. Oh, well, let's clear space. Let's have flexibility. They're sick of it. The reality, though, is from what I've seen from LaVine, not only in Chicago, Hoodie, but in the last few years prior to his injury in Minnesota, right now, I'm just not willing to bet on future production. I mean, the difference between Zach LaVine and Jimmy Butler is that Jimmy Butler, from the first time he stepped foot on an NBA floor, played defense. Zach LaVine is really, really struggling to become a better defender in this league. So do you trust that he's going to get that much better? I mean, if you do, then sure, match whatever offer may come. But if you don't, Hoodie, if you're the Bulls, you've got to know when to fold them, and you got to know when to get up from the table, which is what I've got to learn here in the next few days in Vegas at the blackjack table. But that's a different story.
Yes,
you've got to know when to walk away. And if it gets up to $20 million or $20+ million a year, it wouldn't surprise me if the Bulls did indeed walk away.
Well, I just need to know the direction of the Bulls because there's some mixed signals here. Like, I know you've been hearing.
With the Bulls?
Yeah.
There are mixed signals with the Bulls?
Yes, yes.
You're kidding me.
Not just the fan base, but the front office as well.
You're kidding me.
So here's the mixed signal that I'm referring to. That you know, we talk about this in the 7 o'clock hour. It's like we hear Bulls fans, and I know you've gotten this on your social media and shows that you've hosted about, you know, how come the Bulls didn't get a 1 year, $5 million deal with Boogie Cousins, and how come they're not getting in this free agency mix? But yet, John Paxson told me and you and Chris Bleck that, well, you know, we're young and we're just trying to, and we said to him at the time, before LeBron even signed with Los Angeles, you know your team's going to be in the playoffs, and or you know you're going to be a top eight team. And he just tried to peddle the young stuff, and it's just like you got too many veterans to try to peddle young players. You can't tell me that it's just young players. So, but at the same time, if you sign LaVine, does that mean you're trying to get into the lottery next year, or are you trying to get to the playoffs?
Hoodie, that's a damn good question. I don't know what that question is at the heart of Zach LaVine's future in Chicago. Truly, what kind of player do you think he's going to be? Is he a player that's going to put up nice numbers, but you're going to lose a bunch, or is he going to be a winning player who's going to help lead you into the postseason? That is at the crux of the issue for the Bulls. And the reality, again, to me, is I don't know what the answer is. And if I don't know the answer to that question, what kind of player Zach LaVine is going to be for your team, I'm not paying him $20 million a year. And look, more power to Zach LaVine and his agent, Bill Duffy, if they can go out and find this offer sheet from Sacramento or Atlanta or some mystery team that appears in the next few days. Go get that money. It's not personal. I know after he responded, I was getting all this hate on Twitter, but go get your money. I mean, if you think you're that good, prove it, and you will have a contract befitting of a 23-year-old up-and-coming really good player in the league. But you're making judgments into the future based on what you've seen and based on what you believe a player may turn into. And for me, I think that question you asked is perfect in the sense that do you know what you're going to be if you're investing this much money long-term into this player? And obviously it's not just Zach LaVine. It's what happens with Chris Dunn. What happens with Markkanen? Can he take another step? Is Wendell Carter the type of kid that's going to come in and really make an impact right away? We're going to find out. But LaVine, if you're paying a guy that much money, you got to know exactly what you're getting. And that's always been my argument is I don't know what the hell the Bulls are getting as far as now and into the future, which is why I would be very hesitant to go that far over that $60 million mark.
Your guy Jeff Van Gundy was on with Golic and Wingo.
Best bud.
Well, you got to get that squashed. You got to do a My Name Is Earl thing and fix this thing with Van Gundy.
I've always liked Jeff. I don't know if we can get it turned around, but I'm going to try.
All right. Well, Jeff Van Gundy was on with Golic and Wingo this morning. The NBA should look at a hard cap.
I've always been in favor of a hard cap because I think it would disperse the talent throughout the league. If there was a hard cap and add into that no set maximum salary for any individual player. So, to me, the stars of stars in our league – for how they drive the business, are relatively underpaid.
What do you think of that? Should there be a hard cap in the NBA?
Look, I just read some study that was done on LeBron, and LeBron's going to make, what, $35 million this year. They said the impact that LeBron has on the team he goes to in the city is worth $55 or $60 million. If LeBron can go get $60 million, Hoodie, go get it. I mean, that guy has earned it. Steph Curry, the amount of money that he has made the Golden State Warriors and by proxy the league, is off the charts. Go get as much money as you can. So, yeah, I mean, I am in favor of that. The only issue there is you're going to pay a premium, even more so, for the top players and what happens to all the other players. We'd figure that out over time, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, if you can get more money and the league can open it up to that point, then go for it.
Stephen A. Smith says the Lakers are the third-best team in the West.
Hey, guys, it's Sylvie from Waddle & Sylvie right here on ESPN 1000. You know me. I like to complain. I like to whine.
No, that's not Stephen A. Smith. That is Sylvie.
Hey, guys, it's Sylvie from Waddle & Sylvie right here on ESPN 1000. You know me. I like to complain. I like to whine. If I don't get good customer service, I'm off to the next business, whether it's at Target, on Amazon, whatever I do in my life. And I'm telling you this. Nobody will provide you better customer service than my guy, Ryan Kelly, with a Home Loan Expert.
Well, that's not Stephen A. That's Sylvie A. Smith. Lakers, third best team in the West. Do you agree with him?
No, sir. I do not. As good as that team may be over time, and as great of a player as LeBron is, LeBron still needs other pieces around him in what will be a very difficult Western Conference race. I am not banking on LeBron in year 16, Hoodie, to play 82 games a year. I don't believe that the Lakers can just kind of roll out of training camp and be on the level or close to the Warriors and the Rockets. I think it's going to take more time, and I think it's going to be a matter of fit with the rest of the pieces that they put around LeBron, so long as Kawhi or somebody else doesn't come over. So I don't know exactly how the rest of after 1 and 2 will shake out, but I'd be very surprised if the Lakers found their way that quickly up to that level.
Yeah, I think that they still need to have more scoring. I here's the thing that's weird about the Lakers and how people are reacting to the Lakers signings. They're all 1 year deals. The JaVale McGee's, the Rajon Rondo's, the Caldwell Pope's. They're all a year. Well, and this is a deeper conversation, Nick. But for those that don't like LeBron, they want to see LeBron compete in the West at the same time. You know what I'm saying? For those that hate LeBron, they're like, well, why can't you find more scoring? What are the Lakers doing? Why do you care if you don't like LeBron? It's just it's a it's a weird thing because if you are even just a halfway decent smart NBA fan, you realize that the Lakers, no matter what, are not going to win the championship next year, or maybe not even the next year after that, either way. So I find that interesting.
People get so locked in on LeBron, Hoodie. It's unbelievable. I mean, the Lakers are going to be the storyline in the league, but all these people who are running out here to Vegas and throwing money down on the Lakers to win a title next year, I mean, God bless you, because you got some money to just burn up. It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And frankly, even if Kawhi were to come over in a deal, with what else is around them right now, that's also not going to happen given just how dominant Golden State and to a much lesser extent Houston still are.
What are you going to see in the summer league here from the Bulls? What are your expectations? I saw the roster coached by Randy Brown. Are you looking forward to anything in particular, seeing something?
I want to see how Carter looks. I mean, they are banking on Wendell Carter in a massive way, Hoodie. They believe that he can pair with Markkanen for a long time, that he can stretch the floor, that he can rebound really well off the bat, and they can gear him up defensively for what's coming at him a few months from now. So I want to see how he responds. But I would caution all Bulls fans, and frankly, any NBA fans that are watching the Summer League saying, oh, man, this guy's terrible, or this guy's great. I went to LeBron James' first summer league game in Orlando, Florida, 17 years ago now, and he got dunked on hard by Britton Johnson of Utah fame. I watched Lauri Markkanen really not play that well during the summer league last season. I watched Marcus Teague light people up at times during his summer league stretch. So summer league is not the tell-all. Everybody take a deep breath. But I am looking to see how Carter performs in this kind of setting, knowing that sometimes guys look good here, sometimes they don't. But you can see early who has a feel for the game. And if you're the Bulls, you got to hope that he's got that feel that they all believe he does.
I agree with you, Nick. But when it comes to summer league, Trae Young actually is that bad.
You're listening to my mans and them.
Just some men that's on the mic. And when we rock up on the mic, we rock the mic.
What? Jay Hood. On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
Welcome back.
You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Don't forget to check out the Under the Hood podcast. We got some terrific content for you, whether it is just individual interviews or every hour of the shows that we do weeknights here at 7 on ESPN 1000. Check it out, the Under the Hood podcast. We turn now to a man who covers the Cubs for ESPN.com. It's Jesse Rogers. And Jesse joins me here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Jesse, as always, I appreciate your time. The Cubs took care of business. They defeated the Tigers and took care of them over at Wrigley Field. What were your thoughts on the Cubs getting the job done against Detroit?
Yeah, they really did. Pretty much the same routine as they did against the Twins. Not as much scoring, but you couldn't expect them to keep up that pace of scoring 10 a game. I like this little come-from-behind thing they got going. It's not like you can do that all season, but they are now 22-22 when the other team scores first. That's a nice little confidence boost for your pitching staff, knowing they don't have to be perfect. They can give up some early runs and still win the game. So it really plays into, I think, the pitcher's mindset. Hey, just keep my guys close and we can win, whether they score first or we score first. 22-22 record, just to give you some perspective, Jay Hood. No team since 2006, in fact, the White Sox did it, has been 500 or better when the opponent scores first over the entire season. Right now, the Cubs are 22-22. So some good stuff happening offensively, defensively. Bullpen's been great. Starting pitching still a little shaky. It's sort of unusual to go on a little run like this without starting pitching, but they're doing it. But it can't last forever. They got to get better pitching early in games.
Can you identify the resolve from this ball club? You know, again, we see the numbers and we see the results. Can you identify when it started and which players stood out to you most in this little run here?
Well, I think you have to look at Jason Hayward. He has sort of energized the team along with Javi Baez in different ways. I mean, just, you know, Hayward, years and hard days and months and years of hard work finally paying off. You got to give Chili Davis some credit for that as well. And, of course, Baez just keeps on going. Yeah, he has the occasional bad game, but what he does offensively, defensively, and offensively at the plate and then on the base pass, is just, again, an energizing thing. So those would be the couple guys. But it really is a 1-8 mentality. And when Lester's pitching, I guess 1-9, considering he homered last time out. And I go back to that team meeting Joey Davis had. Everybody's downplaying it, but Since they had that hitters-only meeting, they've scored 70 runs in eight games. And it's just a relaxed atmosphere at the plate. One guy handing the baton to the next guy, and it's not like 1-4 is doing the job. It really is 1-8, sometimes even 9. So that, I kind of go back to that Dodgers game where they closed the doors. They're 7-1 since then and 6 in a row. That kind of got things going. He kind of bottomed out against the Reds when they lost that 4-game set. But since then, it's been great, and most of it's been because of what they've done at the plate.
Jesse Rogers covers the hottest team in baseball, the Chicago Cubs. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. You and I, before the fourth, were kind of looking through the National League together. And with the Cubs, as I mentioned to you, and I've been saying it since – I guess from the beginning of the season, I just think that the roster was built to be able to win this division. Now, as far as how far in the playoffs, that still has to be determined. But is there a close second or third, do you think, to the Cubs as far as roster composition and ability to go far in the playoffs?
Yeah, now I'm a little biased because the division I cover, but I think the Milwaukee Brewers are, with a little bit of a nod to the Dodgers and the run that they're on. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen Arizona this year yet. I do think Atlanta and Philly are dangerous, but they're newbies into this playoff picture. So I think Milwaukee, now that the Dodgers are not having the season they had last year, I like, and when you talk about composition, Milwaukee is deep, like the Cubs. They don't have to start the same 8 guys. That helps in 2 ways. Council can match up against the opposing pitcher. Eric Thames doesn't have to play every day, for example, from the left side. Ryan Braun doesn't have to play every day from the right side. So you get the matchups and you get your guys rest. That matters. Joe has proven that over and over and over again. Every manager, I think, in his heart would love to have a position player roster 10 or 11 deep like the Cubs or the Brewers have. So I think roster composition-wise, it's very similar. Cubs on paper have better starting pitching, but that hasn't been proven out in the first half. They both have good bullpens. So I think it's pretty darn even. Both play great defense. In fact, I think the Brewers, at least until recently, led the league in defensive runs saved. Last night, they had an unbelievable catch by Cam Braxton at the wall to bring back a home run ball, and they won that game. They won a couple nights ago in the ninth inning to tie it, then the tenth inning to win it. So what I'm getting at is not only is it roster composition, there's a little mojo going with the Brewers that the Cubs have had for a couple years. and I've said this before, I think the Cubs and Brewers have it. I think the Cardinals do not have it. And so to answer your question, I think it's Milwaukee that has a similar composition, makeup, and will to win. And remember, they're even hungrier, Milwaukee. They haven't made it to the playoffs or won a World Series with this group in the front office and in the dugout. So they've got that little chip on their shoulder like the Cubs have had in the past.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned the National League East with the Braves and the Phillies, Jesse, because unless the Braves just get hot as fire and they all of a sudden they become the Kansas City Royals or, you know, Houston Astros of 2018, that's a team that's just overachieving way too quickly. You know, you bottom out and now you're in first place in the East. Same thing with the Phillies. Phillies that have a nice run here. But to me, I just think that the Cubs, because of the tenure on that team, the veterans that have been their World Series champions up and down that lineup, that to me, that resonates with me more than, you know, guys like the, you know, teams like the Braves, the Phillies, and even the Diamondbacks to an extent.
Yeah, at least the Diamondbacks had a little run last year. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. I think the Braves are better than the Phillies. I think the Braves, because of a guy like Freddie Freeman, they have some veteran leadership there. The Phillies really are newbies. You know, Arrieta, obviously, maybe something at the deadline. But, of course, Atlanta might add as well. I do like Atlanta better than Philly this first time around contending for both teams. Now, where is Washington in this picture? Our old buddy Davey Martinez. That team is having all sorts of troubles. So yeah. Can they upend the upstart Phillies or Braves? I don't know at this point. We're halfway through and they're 500. But I do like the Braves better than Phillies. I don't like either team in a playoff series. I do like the Cubs, Brewers, and even Diamondbacks in a playoff series over all those teams. But that, just because I like it doesn't mean it will happen. Playoffs are a roll of the dice. Pitcher or two can get hot. It can change everything. But I think just like the Cubs had to earn their stripes, and you know, every team has to earn its stripes at least one time before going deep, I think that's the case for Philly and Atlanta both.
Did you see Greeny on Get Up? With a little shot at Bryce Harper and the $400 million man. You see Greenberg, a minute 14 on the ESPN page, because that's a thing. People are wondering, will we see a $400 million man in the next year or two? And Bryce Harper was going to be that guy. But when the team is struggling and he has not been necessarily great, I don't see that big contract for him.
I'll tell you, the only team that would probably pay him that is Washington. Remember what Boris got Washington to pay Scherzer. There's a great relationship there between Washington and Scott Boris, I should say, ownership. If anyone's going to pay him huge money, it's them. I don't know. I think last offseason proved better be careful what we predict in terms of who's getting what. Things have changed in baseball, and it might stay that way until the next CBA. I don't know. I think a position player gets up the same amount as everybody else in the lineup, basically, right? I mean, maybe the top four guys get five at-bats, the bottom four or five guys get four at-bats. But it's not like Bryce Harper can bat first, fourth, and eighth in a lineup.
Right.
What I'm getting at is, how valuable is one player to a baseball team? Mike Trout is the greatest player of his generation, and that team stinks year after year. So I'd be very careful spending all that money on one player, unless you're going to spend it on three or four or five players. I mean, it's all relative. If you can spend $400 million there and $300 million on Chris Bryant and $200 million when he's up on Anthony Rizzo, all right, great. But most teams won't do that. So I'd be very careful putting all my eggs in one basket when it comes to one baseball player.
You have a bunch of agents in your phone from your days, obviously, covering baseball and also hockey. But Boris and some of those big-time swingers, they don't go over to hockey, right? There is no Boris of hockey from your days coming to Blackhawks, is there?
There are some big names. Pat Brisson was Luke Robitaille's agent, and that's how he got famous. He's Kane and Taves' agent. Mm-hmm. Not sure if he's Crosby's agent, but he's got a lot of the big shooters, Pat Brisson out in L.A. So there are some big ones. Now, Boris is the most outspoken of anybody in any sport. Well, maybe, I don't know about the NBA, I don't follow as closely agent-wise, but Boris is right up there with everyone else. But there's some big shooters in hockey, no doubt about it. I just mentioned one. You've got Kane, Taves. I can't remember if he has Crosby or not, but you know you got a pretty good stable of clients if you've got those two. But Boris is the best I've been around.
The hockey guy's got a couple of Hall of Famers there. He's got three. If he represents Crosby too, you got at least three Hall of Famers in your stable.
Yeah, what not is the, bad, not bad at all. Yeah,
Jesse, what's the latest on the injury situation with the Cubs?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a strange situation, I think, with Bryant and Darvish, more Darvish than Bryant. I really think it's in both the players' hands to decide what the next step is. MRIs have not shown anything terrible with either player. So what's the pain tolerance for either player? Will this linger for Bryant, or will he wait until it's 100%, if it can be 100%? So that's sort of on him. What can he do with that shoulder injury? Same with Darvish. He's had the cortisone shot. Maybe that'll solve everything. Who knows? But what can he pitch through? It doesn't sound like either guy has to be shut down or have surgery or anything like that. And obviously, Brian, I think, is much less serious in terms of because of what he does than throwing a baseball like Darvish does. So I think the ball's in their court. It's pretty clear when the pain, when you can play through this pain you're feeling or whatever you're feeling, get back out there and do it. So that's what it sounds like to me. Another day off for both these guys on Thursday. We'll see what happens Friday. But didn't sound like Bryant would be back. And if Darvish is back, it only means he's in the bullpen throwing. So we're inching closer to that All-Star break. That gives them another three days. I was going to say 3 to 4, but just 3 days. We'll see. Obviously, more than likely, Darvish won't pitch in the majors till after the All-Star break. I'd be a little surprised still if Bryant doesn't come back, at least by the end of the weekend or early next week.
When are you going to hit enter on that column of possible tradables for the Cubs as we get closer to the deadline?
Great question. My editor was just talking to me about that today. Next week, in fact. Next week will be the first sort of update on what the Cubs need. I made some calls early in the week. We'll follow up probably in the next couple of days. And by next week when the team goes out west, I'll have something up there on ESPN.com. It's mostly going to involve pitching. I think obviously what they've done recently on offense and through 81, 82 games, whatever it is, pretty impressive. I don't think they're going to waste their assets on a position player. They've got enough bats, even if someone goes down. They don't have enough pitching. So you'll see something up next week, and we can discuss it further then.
You know, Labor Day is right around the corner, Jesse, in September. So
people get gifts for Labor Day?
Yes.
Waiting your mailbox is a book that people can buy on Amazon. Try not to suck. I signed one for you, Jay Hood, so when you're able to get to your mailbox, make sure you pick it up.
Okay. Well, can people buy on Amazon.com? Is that where they can find that?
That's where they can go. Local bookstores, O'Hare. It's in all the bookstores at O'Hare as well. So if you're traveling and need something to read on the plane, great book to pick up. Try Not to Suck, the untold story on Joe Maddon. It's just a biography. It's untold because no one else has written one. That's the only reason. But it's a cool biography on Joe Maddon.
You don't have to pardon me, Jesse. I've run out of holidays here between now and Labor Day. So,
you have. You have to wait till Christmas, I guess.
I'm trying my best, but I don't have anything for you until Labor Day. Jesse, as always, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks. Have a great night. Talk to you soon, Jay Hood.
Hey, yo, Jay Hood, run that back. Give them the info they need.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweet Jay Hood. Also on Snapchat, Snap Jay Hood. You follow me on Snapchat, I will follow you back, guaranteed. Now, tomorrow, there's Under the Hood show. I will not be here because it's Friday. It's the holiday for me. The holiday meaning a day off. And then I'm back Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, we'll be on from 10 to midnight. There's a baseball game, so we'll be on 10 to midnight with Dickerson and Hood. And then on Sunday from 3 to 6 p.m., again, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So look forward to you listening. And, of course, I'll be back Monday through Thursday next week on ESPN 1000. And the ESPN app. So we're keeping our eyes, obviously, on the NBA free agency, as we talked a lot about that here on the program tonight. And it's funny to hear Bulls fans talk about, you know, what's going on with my team? How come the Bulls aren't going for DeMarcus Cousins? How come the Bulls are not trying to get into free agency? Because there's two different roads and two different things going on with the Bulls. Two different schools of thought, which is just kind of strange to me. It just is. You know that no matter what, as is, if the Bulls don't make any kind of free agency moves, that they're a top 8 team in the East. Look at the East. course you're a top eight team in the East. But then John Paxson on draft night, when I'm with Nick Friedell and Chris Bleck and we're doing the draft show, and I hit him with it, hey, you know the Bulls are going to make the playoffs. This is before we knew that LeBron was going to the Los Angeles Lakers. And Pax goes,
let's slow the train down here a little bit. So
Pax, it's a weak Eastern Conference, yeah. And we see the landscape before us.
It may be much weaker in a couple weeks too.
Well, the train is getting past you.
Yeah,
that's not what you wanted. But look at the core that you have. Don't you think that's a top eight team that you're running?
Let's see. I never want to anoint young players to, you know, all of a sudden they're gonna be something. This league is hard.
Dunn and LaVine are veterans.
Yeah, they are. They're some of our most veterans. When you draft like this, you tend to forget certain other guys. And we still have Bobby Portis, who had a terrific year for us. Denzel Valentine, who had some really good times for us. So we feel like we're kind of starting this nice nucleus, and it's young. But look,
it's moving too fast for you.
Well, we're realistic. We know this. In order to win in this league.
I got him. He's like, wait a minute. You mean we'll be in the playoffs? Yeah. If you leave it the way it is, you'll be a top eight team. And that's not what they wanted. They want a tank and they want to be in the lottery. But guess what? You got too many veterans to do that. It's just crazy. Bulls need to find a direction. Get on that train one way or the other. It's just hilarious to me. Gar says, yeah, the playoffs are good. He's fine with it. Paxson says, hey, whoa, that thing. We thank you for listening and being part of the program here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We thank you for listening. Our thanks to Howard Griffith, Jesse Rogers, and Nick Friedell for being with us. Show produced by Sean Davis on the other side of the glass. All right, back with you Saturday night, 10 to midnight, Sunday, 3 to 6. Check in with me. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Don't forget the podcast as well. Wherever you find podcasts, look for Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. I will talk to you on Saturday.
You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Maybach Music.